Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I hope everybody is enjoying this wonderful weekend, this wonderful Earth Day weekend. I don't know how many of you were here for our big Earth Day Green Fair yesterday, but those that did, I'm sure had a great time. And those that didn't, I'll bet you wish you had. Well, my name is Jerry Flakus, and I am the board representative for the Church Board of Trustees this morning. Well, we have a variety of announcements about church life and activities, so please read them in your order of service. It'll be on the back page. And again, we encourage you to take the order of service home with you after the service to remind you of these things. This is a frame of reference. We do have a few other announcements. First, as a reminder, today we're having our Earth Day potluck lunch in the social hall. So join us for a nutritious and earth-friendly meal after coffee. And it's okay if you didn't bring anything. We think there'll be plenty. Things are still trickling in the door as we speak, so I think we'll be all right. For those who are participating in the UU orientation today, you can... and participating in the potluck also. Just take your lunch into the big double classroom four, and you can have your lunch during the orientation. So there's an insert in the order of service about the UU Ministry for Earth. They've got a 40-40-42 program, and here's the insert, nice colorful little thing. And what the UUA is asking us to do is asking for members of our congregation to pledge to commit to big or small lifestyle changes for 40 days to celebrate the 42nd Earth Day. They're looking for 40 or more of us to commit to these lifestyle changes for 40 days to celebrate the 42nd Earth Day. And we're not collecting pledges or anything like this. It's totally up to you what you want to do. There are suggested sample actions on the table in the foyer. There's a pile of, you can help yourself and participate in this as you see fit. Now, there's a congregational environmental survey as a part of the process for obtaining official Green Sanctuary accreditation. This survey will be used as a baseline survey of our members' current practices. Now, we did this a few years ago, and some of you participated in it. But what the UUA would like us to do as part of becoming an official Green Sanctuary is do this survey of our members. So we ask that you please participate in this. We encourage you to participate in the survey online. And there's on that same table in the foyer, there's an instruction sheet. There'll be an email going out explaining how to do this. It'll also be in the newsletter. And we're hoping to collect these surveys by the end of May. Now, John Kuhn has asked me to announce that we still have no sign-ups for the mowing the lawn, which is a fun job. we call ourselves the Rough Riders, and if you've never done it, try it. You'll see what I mean. But anyway, it's not all that bad, so please sign up. There's a sign-up sheet on the bulletin board. Barb Adams, do you have an announcement?
Yeah. I'm going to need my phone. I am Barb, and I'm known by my friends as the Queen of Over Preparation. And we have quite a few baked goods left from yesterday, so we'll all be sharing them in the dining hall. But I brought some bags and some foil, and if you guys would just do willing donations, I'll want to send all of them to home today. Thanks.
And everything was really great. Esther has an announcement.
I wasn't planning this, but
I know.
Standing up here, she made some wonderful, wonderful food yesterday, and a lot of it. And that's what she's talking about is the leftover food. And you know, you never know how many people are going to show up for this Green Fair, and so she wanted to make sure we get enough. But that's the leftovers that she's talking about. But it was absolutely delicious. Both the chili and the Christmas chili.
Pascal has a few words for us.
Al's few words? Thanks. Jerry talked about our orientation class today, and we're excited. We have a large group of exciting, interested people coming, but I just wanted to make you all aware that if you just missed the chance to sign up and you've been thinking about coming to the orientation, you're welcome to do so. So if you've got an interest in that, please find me after the service. Thanks.
I invite you to greet those sitting around you. Visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. And if any of you are visiting us and you're comfortable, you could just raise your hand and give us your name, and we'll be happy to welcome you.
My name's Roger, and this is my wife Eve. And we live close by here. We are members of another church. We were running a little late today. We've always wanted to come check it out. some of you know Living Spirit Church down way south of here. But so we're members of a metaphysical community, and we're just wanted to see what this church is all about.
Awesome. Okay, there's a variety of information available on the table about our church and Unitarian Universalism, and please help yourself with anything that might interest you. And we do have a coffee after the church service. You're certainly welcome to join us. And potluck if you wish to. Let's see, well, you're visiting us with your children. It is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time they will go to the religious education classes. Child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the door to my right, and across the entryway if there's a need for child care during the service. So classes will end at 11:15 a.m., at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. So, as we said before, everybody is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and for the lunch. Please put your cell phones on the silent mode during the service. And we hope you'll find this morning's service to be interesting and inspiring. Inspiring. choir. I remember that song from when I was about the age of some of the younger kids I see in our sanctuary. Our opening words this morning were written by the Reverend Barbara Wells, now Barbara Wells Tenhove, and you would find them in our hymn book number 431 if you wanted to read along. Spinner, weaver of our lives, your loom is love. May we who are gathered here be empowered by that love to weave new patterns of truth and justice into a web of life that is strong, beautiful, and everlasting. And in this spirit, this morning, we light our chalice. the opening hymn. Let's join together in singing number 207, Earth is Given as a Garden.
Connected Whatever befalls the earth, befalls the sons and daughters of the earth.
We did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it.
Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves.
Oh, good morning. It's story time. Who wants to come down to the front? Good morning. Yeah, the youthful in spirit are invited down to the front as well as the youthful in age. Yeah, it's nice to have company when you come down. Well, this morning, my story is entitled A Throw It Away Place. I want to talk a few minutes this morning about throwing things away. What would a throw it away place look like? And is there such a place somewhere? Well, you want to tell us what it would look like? Sure.
Well, it could be a trash can.
A trash can. Mm-hmm.
Recycle bin.
A recycle bin, yeah. Okay, so there are places that we throw things away, are there not? And some people would say, yes, there is a place to throw things away. And they mean a place where we can throw things we don't want anymore, or things that we can't use anymore, or things that are broken or worn out. And some people just use the sidewalk, or a lawn, or the street, or the highway as places to throw away such things as candy and gum wrappers and snack bags and plastic water bottles and aluminum or plastic or glass cans and fast food containers and other things. Some people say, no, these are not places to throw away things that we are done with. This just makes a big mess for someone else to clean up. And so they put their trash and garbage in a can, a trash can, or a dumpster, and they think this is the end of it. Yes, this is a lot better than dropping trash and food wherever you happen to be. However, trash or garbage in a can or dumpster does not go away by itself. Someone has to empty the can or dumpster, or it will be soon so full of trash and garbage that things will begin to fall out all over the ground. So the trash can or the dumpster is really not a throwaway place. What has to happen next? Okay, so it can be crushed and it can be burned, and there are other ways to dispose of it. Well, as we all know, we have seen it happen. Usually a garbage truck comes by to pick up all the stuff that no one wants, and the garbage truck drives to a garbage dump or a landfill, and it empties out all of the stuff. And you know what? A garbage dump is not really a throwaway place because the stuff doesn't go away. It just stays there. all the trash and garbage does not end up in a garbage dump in landfills. Some of it ends up in rivers and lakes and in the ocean. And it looks terrible. And worse than that, it pollutes the water. And polluted water kills plants and fish and dolphins and whales and birds and other animals that live in the water. Well, let me tell you another part of the story. Did you know that there is a place in the Pacific Ocean which is so filled with plastic bags that people thought they were throwing away? And there are so many bags there that nothing can live there anymore. Well, this is not the whole story about the idea that there is a throwaway place somewhere. Lots of things that companies want to get rid of and throw away end up polluting Earth and the land and the sea and the water and the air. So what can be done about this? Can anything be done about this? Well, I think the first thing that can be done to help in this situation is to change the way that we and other people think about throwing things away. Instead of thinking there is a place somewhere that we can throw things away, we can learn and remember that there is no such place anywhere. And we can stop talking as if we can throw things away. And then we and other people can think about other ways to do things. As you suggested just a minute ago, recycling is one of those things. We use things for a second or a third time instead of throwing away. And composting is another. You have a suggestion?
Well, but there's something like you can't recycle or compost like a...
Yeah.
Like a plastic bag.
Okay. You can burn something, but then what happens to things that we burn? They go up into the air, the smoke and the other things goes up in the air, so we're not really getting rid of them, we're just changing them to something else. But as I suggested, composting is a good thing to do, which uses leftover food to help make richer soil instead of putting it in the garbage can. And I'm sure that you and I and everyone else can think of a lot of other ways which will help us stop thinking that we can ever find a throwaway place. And this is one of the things that Earth Day is about, and today is Earth Day. And when you go to your religious education classes, I think you're going to be doing some Earth Day activities today. Today, we are part of a billion people around the Earth who are coming together to learn about the ways we can make our Earth a cleaner and safer and a more beautiful place for everyone. Now, where is Paul? Has our lantern? Who is going to carry our lantern out? Do we have a person who has been selected? You would like to carry our lantern out?
Well, it's my birthday today.
Well, if it's your birthday, then that, like, of course. You want to come up and get the lantern? And we will sing a song as you go out, and all the rest of you can follow the lantern carrier as you go off to your religious education classes.
Thank you.
As noted in the order of service, this is a time when we invite all to share their joys or concerns with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand and the usher will bring you a microphone. And please briefly tell us your name and the joy or concern you wish to share. I will light a candle to represent your joy or concern. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys multiplied. First, I will light our memorial candle today to acknowledge the earth. May we learn to take care of it.
I'm Mary, and I have a concern that I'm so busy that I invited a whole bunch of friends today to come to the Earth Day celebration this afternoon.
Oh, I'm Lynn. I just want to thank all those who helped with the Green Fair yesterday. It's really a wonderful event, all the food and music and presentations, and really wonderful.
I'm Sue, and I have a candle of joy for, for Charlie Sykes, for raising the visibility of the wall of prejudice at Carroll to the point where it really did effectively create a campus and community conversation about the issues that the men who set it up were trying to take part in.
My name is Jim, and I'd like to light a candle for my wonderful father that lived a long and full life.
My name is Chris. A candle of joy, please. I just went through a little bit of a rough patch over the last many months, and this is for all the people who were so supportive and many people in this room, but I had friends, I knew I had friends, but man, I really relied on them, and I'm so thankful for them.
This is Esther. I'd like you to light a candle of joy, because I feel we need to thank the people who take on chairmanships or chairpersonships, such as that Green Fair that we had yesterday, and that is Barb Howell and Teresa Kennedy. They did a great job. They brought in some great vendors, and not knowing what that weather was going to turn out like yesterday. Hope you can hear this. Anyway, it takes on a lot. Anyway, they did a great job.
This is Robert. Light up candle of concern. I agreed to do something that I can hardly believe that I'm going to do. Someone from the UUSC asked me if I would come to Washington to talk to Senator Johnson and Cole and Representative Sensenbrenner about the trip that I took to Haiti. And I hope I'll be an effective voice for the people of Haiti trying to recover.
This is Lois. I have a candle of concern for my son-in-law. He has a tumor on his kidney and going for a biopsy tomorrow. His name is David.
I'm Al. A candle of concern for my nephew Gino's nephew, Mikey, diagnosed with leukemia.
And I will light one final candle for all the joys and concerns we hold in our hearts.
Let us join our hearts in a time of meditation and reflection and prayer. prayer written by Richard M. Fuchs, a Unitarian Universalist minister. For the sun and the dawn, which we did not create, for the moon and the evening, which we did not make, for food which we plant, but we cannot grow, for friends and loved ones we have not earned and cannot buy, for this gathered congregation which welcomes us as we are from wherever we have come, for all religious institutions that keep us human and encourage us in our quest for beauty and truth and love, for all things which come to us as gifts of being from sources beyond ourselves, gifts of life, gifts of love, gifts of friendship. This day, we lift up our hearts in thanks and in gratitude. And now in silence, let us each continue in the spirit of prayer and meditation. Amen. Let us rise in body or in spirit and join in singing together hymn number 134, Our World is One World.
Someone has more than enough, his possessions do not give him life. And he told them this parable. There was a rich man whose land yielded a good harvest. He debated with himself, "What am I to do? I have not the space to store my produce. This is what I will do. I will pull down my barns and build them bigger, I will collect in them all my grain and other goods, and I will say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid by, enough for many years to come. Take life easy, eat, drink, and enjoy yourself. But God said to him, you fool, this very night you must surrender your life. And the money you have made, who will get it now? Our other reading is by Wendell Berry from Sex, Economy, Freedom, and Community. Obviously, the sense of the holiness of life is not compatible with an exploitive economy. You cannot know that life is holy if you are content to live from economic practices that daily destroy life and diminish its possibilities. And many, if not most, religious organizations now appear to be perfectly at peace with the military-industrial economy and its scientific destruction of life. Surely, if we are to remain free and if we are to remain true to our religious inheritance, we must maintain a separation of church and state. But if we are to maintain any sense of coherence or meaning in our lives, we cannot tolerate the present utter disconnection between religion and economy. By economy, I do not mean economics, which is the study of money making, but rather the ways of human housekeeping. The ways by which the human household is situated and maintained within the household of nature. To be uninterested in economy is to be uninterested in the practice of religion. It is to be uninterested in culture and character. Probably the most urgent question now faced by religious people is this: what sort of economy would be responsible to the holiness of life? What, for religious people, would be the economy, the practices, and the restraints of right livelihood? I do not believe that organized religion now has any idea. I think its idea of a religious economy is no more or less than the industrial economy. If religion is going to survive as more than a respecter and comforter of profitable iniquities, then religious people, regardless of their organizations, are going to have to interest themselves in economy, which is to say, in nature and in work. They are going to have to give workable answers to those who say we cannot live without this economy that is destroying us and our world, who see the murder of creation as the only way of life.
Well, these two prophets, Jesus and Wendell Berry, tell it like it is. What a weekend this has been. Yesterday, the Green Fair was wonderful, and it was fun as well. I carry a lot of images and memories of events and displays, and good food, and great companionship. The day was at the same time joyous and serious. One image stands out for me as a symbol of the day. In the background are the solar panels, our solar panels, doing the serious environmental work that solar panels do. And in the foreground, in front of these serious solar panels, there are adults and there are children singing for our enjoyment and for the sheer joy of singing. And I maintain that this is a life and it is religion as it should be. So thanks to all who played a part in bringing that to us. We come today
We come together in celebration of the 42nd Earth Day. Earth Day was established in April of 1970, and the principal founder, as probably many of you will remember, was Senator Gaylord Nelson. And where did he come from?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Boy, that seems a long time ago, doesn't it? In 1970, 20 million Americans participated in launching the modern environmental movement. And here we are, 42 years later, and 1 billion people around the earth are participating in Earth Day activities as we are. Earth Day has become the largest civic observation in the world. And Earth Day is a citizen movement whose aim and goals and programs are to transform the world, to save the earth and all its people from the progressive degradation and the ultimate destruction of the ecosphere. That is the destruction of the Earth's capacity to support life. As we today ponder our human fate and the fate of the Earth, I was moved to consider the profound difference between the lifestyle of my maternal grandparents and my own lifestyle, and our respective impacts on our common natural environment. My grandparents, A.T. and Kira Colley, were born in Georgia not long after the Civil War, and they lived out their lives into the 20th century, both dying in the late 1930s during the Great Depression and shortly before World War II. Both of these people were the children of farmers who tilled small acreage farms before and after the Civil War. And my grandparents no longer lived on the farm. Earlier, they and their parents had settled in Enterprise, a farm-serving community of 5,000 people in southeast Alabama. My grandfather was a physician, and for many years he was the only MD in that part of the county, Coffee County. He practiced medicine primarily out of his physician's bag. There was no hospital in Enterprise during much of his career. Many of his patients had no means of transportation to get to his office in town, so Dr. Colley traveled the country by horse and buggy until the early 1920s, when he purchased the first auto in the country, a Model T Ford. Driving the dirt country roads in Alabama in those days was a hazardous adventure, whether by horse and buggy or by car. I remember my mother telling stories of family trips on the dirt roads, the only kind of roads there were between Enterprise, Alabama, and Birmingham. It took 2 days of driving to cover 175 miles. And if there was rain along the way, or if there was an auto breakdown, it took even longer. Well, today, it takes about 2.5 hours in sun or rain to drive from Enterprise to Birmingham. Enterprise was at the center of the Alabama cotton and peanut country. Farmers brought their crops to town for processing. My grandparents who lived in town were self-sustaining in many ways in their food production. They maintained a one-acre garden at the back of their property, and you can raise a lot of food on an acre of land. And on their acre, they grew the produce for their meals. They ate fresh vegetables in the growing season, and they canned vegetables for the other seasons. Behind their house, they had a large chicken yard, which provided adequate numbers of eggs and chickens for their consumption. Much of their other food was provided by barter, not by cash. Dr. Colley was often paid for his service in pork and beef and lamb. And the Colleys maintained a large storage bin at the ice house for these products. My grandparents lived in the Deep South in a large house with high ceilings. There was, of course, no air conditioning. Heat came primarily from shallow fireplaces which burned hard coal. As a small boy, I remember a wood stove in the kitchen, which was still used for heat, but no longer for cooking. Rural electrification began during the years after Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected president in 1932. In their time, the only universal method of communication was face-to-face conversation. And for the literate, there was also the written word. There were no radios. There were no movies until well after World War I. When telephones came to the area, the companies were small and independent, and each restricted within its own geographical area with no capacity to communicate with those in other geographical areas. So in my grandparents' house, there were six different phones in the hallway, and the lines for each went out from Enterprise in a different direction because each line was unable to communicate with the others. So consequently, Dr. Colley needed six phones if all of his patients were to be able to get in touch with him. This gives you a brief snapshot picture of some of the features of life during my grandparents' generation. I'll bet that the elders among us, well, the elders like me, have memories and stories similar to mine. The relatively simple and sustainable lifestyle, the relatively technologically free age of my grandparents changed dramatically and radically during my parents' 20th century generation, and it has only accelerated further during my 20th and 21st century lifetime, and it grows even more complex during my children's generation. And I ask, what is in store for my grandchildren? What is in store for yours? What is in store beyond for future generations not yet born? We don't know the exact details, but we do know that if the current trajectory continues unabated, we will move further and deeper into an economic system in which there are users and producers, but in which practically no one uses or consumes primarily what they produce. We do know that the clear trend worldwide is toward larger numbers of people, toward greater complexity of life, toward increased negative environmental impact on the earth and the water and the air. And we do know that the consumption of non-renewable energy to fuel our technologically complex lives and society continues to rise through the years and the generations. And we do know that the byproducts of this massive energy expenditure are progressively poisoning our entire environment on land and at sea and in the air. A very sober picture, isn't it? Well, Earth Day is a time to move counter to this direction. Earth Day is an opportunity to begin or to continue our education and evaluation. Earth Day is a time to take stock, to evaluate the directions we are heading, to re-examine how our own lifestyles impact the environment, to consider the ways we can make personal and family changes, and the way we can promote economic and social and political changes as well. Earth Day is a time to be thoughtful, to be mindful. It is a time to prepare for action. As part of my own education and preparation for Earth Day and beyond, a few days ago, I took the Earth Day Network's Ecological Footprint Survey. Anybody else around here done that? Well, I suggest you do. Let me say before I get to the results of the survey, I think that I and my wife Nan take environmental issues seriously. Yes, we drive a car because usually we have no other choice, personally and professionally and as citizens. But we do drive a Prius, which shows some level of environmental awareness and concern. Yes, we regularly recycle our paper and our plastic and our glass. We watch the thermostat. In winter, we turn down the temperature, and in summer, we seldom use our apartment's central air conditioning. As citizens, we participate in signing environmental petitions and in contacting members of Congress about environmental issues. And we contribute to environmental organizations. We read, we think, we seek to further educate ourselves. You get the picture. I'm sure that most of you take the same or similar steps. Okay, that's the apology. What did I discover in my environmental impact survey? This is the simple answer. If everyone in the world lived as Nan and I live, it would require between 5 and 6 planet Earths to provide enough resources. Now, I know I live a privileged life on this earth. My privilege, the evidence of my privilege, is found in, among other things, these facts. I am an American citizen. I am a Euro-American as an American citizen. I am male. I am college and graduate school educated. I am a professional. I am employed. I own my own home. Another evidence of my privilege is that for the most part, I travel by auto, both at home in Chicago and on my 20 trips from Chicago to Heartland this year. And in addition, during the last 12 months, I have made 8 auto trips to other places, and I've also made 8 plane trips, including a trip to a family wedding in Hawaii. I also know that in relation to other Americans, I don't really lead an extravagant lifestyle. And yet, despite this, my ecological footprint is lavish and extravagant in terms of the Earth's capacity to provide resources for my way of life. While I am not altogether responsible for the high environmental cost of living that is a result of my privilege as American, in some ways, I and you and all Americans are trapped in our lifestyles. By world standards, virtually all Americans have high standards of living. And wealth, income, is the best predictor of our fossil fuel consumption and our subsequent carbon footprint. As incomes rise, so rises our negative impact on the environment. And to make it even more complicated, we know that nations and people around the world aspire to and strive toward our standard of living. But we only have one Earth, not five or six Earths that would be needed for everyone to achieve my lifestyle. So something has to give. And I think the question is whether what gives is the result of irreversible ecological disaster, or whether what gives or that individuals and communities and governments and corporations worldwide change the practices which are leading us toward disaster and destruction. I believe firmly and fervently that we humans as a species, all of us living here on the earth, face a religious challenge in regard to our common impact on the environment, and it makes no difference what our religion is, or even indeed whether we have a religion or not. It is a religious challenge. Perhaps you will remember that Martin Luther King put it this way: if we do not learn to live together as friends, we will die apart as fools. Our life circumstance and religious challenge, these are similar to that of a certain rich man in the parable that we heard this morning. And reflecting on this parable, Wendell Berry wrote, "The offense seems to be that he has stored up too much, and the process has belittled the future, for he has reduced it to the size of his own hopes and expectations. He is prepared for a future in which he will be prosperous, but not for one in which he will be dead. We know from our experience that it is possible to live in the present in such a way as to diminish the future practically as well as spiritually, by laying up much goods in the present, and in the process using up such goods as topsoil and fossil fuel and fossil water, we incur a debt to the future by deeds that we call use, but that the future will call theft." Responsible criticism, religiously based criticism, must begin in the realistic self-assessment and self-criticism in the manner of Wendell Berry. The problem is not simply the other guy. The problem is us. And us includes you and me and the other guy. So what do we say about this inclusive us? this is what I believe we must see. It begins by acknowledging that we Unitarians and Universalists were and we are as complicit in following and accepting the outcomes of the American doctrines of manifest destiny and American exceptionalism as anyone else. Driven by narrow self-serving interests and brutal conduct, first the European explorers and then the European American settlers spread across the North American continent, displacing and removing and killing the native populations, introducing slavery for Africans brought to America, wreaking havoc on the environment, exploiting the natural resources with no regard for the environmental degradation and destruction that they were bringing to it. And today, through our lifestyles, our employment and economic practices, our politics, and our international diplomacy, we Unitarian Universalists, along with other Americans, are still dependent upon and implicated in corporate and industrial practices in manufacturing and farming, in mining and fishing, and many other pursuits which degrade and destroy the environment, which exploit not only the natural resources, but the people who live on the earth too. Now, let me be quick to assert that the United States is not alone in these practices, nor is the free enterprise system or the so-called free markets alone responsible. These are not particular American practices. Capitalists and socialists and communists and other economic systems are alike in their negative impact, both on the environment and on the people who live in the environment. So, what does Unitarian Universalist religion, liberal religion, have to say about all this? We, for better or worse, belong to religious liberalism, to its history, to its values, to its hopes and its visions. We belong to it more than it belongs to us. A claim has been laid upon us by our free choice to be part of this community. And if we take our religion seriously, it will influence our understanding of our responsibilities, our obligations, and our accountabilities to one another and to the larger human communities of which we are a part, and to the earth and all its creatures and features of which indeed we are also a part, and to the sacred source and order from which all of this arises. And it can be stated in whatever language of reverence and respect that we employ to understand it. So in this circumstance, what is our common covenant? What are the promises and the pledges that we make to one another? I think it might be stated something like this. This is our covenant. We promise our mutual fidelity to serve truth and beauty and goodness. We pledge loving and caring ways one to another. We offer mutual affection for all humankind. We will respect the world and all its creatures and its features, and we commit to serve the source and the foundation of life. A phrase which rings true for me in our religious journey and pilgrimage is love of the world. Deep and abiding affection for the world and for our life in the world. And this means that we understand we are not owners of the earth or any part of it. We are the world's guests. And while we are sojourners here, we are also caretakers in the world, and of the world, and for the world. So you ask, what might this religious perspective mean in practical terms? Well, I think we can begin by looking at the Earth Day insert in the order of service this morning. Start almost anywhere suggested. Use your imagination and your initiative to find ways. The possibilities are endless. They are intriguing, and they are deeply satisfying too. I want to offer just one inspired and brilliant story that is reported by Stephen Messenger. In 1979, Jadav Peying, a 16-year-old boy living in India's Assam region, began buying seeds and burying them along a barren sandbar near his birthplace. He wanted to build a refuge for wildlife in this inhospitable environment. Well, 30 years have passed. And during these 30 years, by his devotion of a lifetime, he has single-handedly created a new forest ecosystem of 1,360 acres. And what was once barren land is now a safe haven for birds and deer and rhinos and tigers and elephants, along with many other creatures. And the area has come to be known as the Malayi Woods, using Jadav's nickname. On this 42nd Earth Day, we ask not only, what can one person accomplish? We ask too, what will a billion Earth Day participants accomplish through a billion acts of green? We never know the long-range impact of what we are starting, because the future always lies beyond our control. But as the certain rich man discovered, the short-sighted preparation for personal future prosperity is not effective when the inevitable future outcome of every one of our lives is death. And we can't take it with us. Yes, this is a cliche, but it is also true. Albert Camus wrote, "Real generosity toward the future lies in giving all to the present." And Jadav Peying's Malayi Woods are a testimony to that. Through acts large and small, this Earth Day we too can begin here and now, exactly where we are, to bestow our legacy, our gifts, toward creating and sustaining a green future. You will remember that Kermit the Frog sings, "It ain't easy being green." But let us add, easy doesn't work when it comes to being green. Earth Day is indeed a day of joyous celebration, as we discovered yesterday and as we discover when we join together in our meal after this service. But it is also a day to roll up our sleeves and to begin the demanding but deeply satisfying work of serving our world and saving our lives right here on our earth.
time, very brief time here for a polylogue if we're interested in doing that. Otherwise, I suggest if somebody does have something they would like to say, you raise your hand. Otherwise, I'm going to move ahead so we can get on to the after-service eating and enjoying the conversation there as well. So if anybody has a comment they can't hold, raise your hand. Then now is the time for our offertory. We have been warmed by fires we did not build. We have drunk at wells we did not dig. We acknowledge not only our blessings, but also our many needs. This community exists because we sustain it. The gifts of the congregation will now be gratefully received.
Thank you.
close with these words of Emil Goodmanson. And now may we have faith in life to do wise planting, that the generations to come may reap even more abundantly than we. May we be bold in bringing to fruition the golden dream of human kinship and justice. This we ask, that the fields of promise may become fields of reality. Amen.
Thank you.